The Mishnah, and we're talking about the Mishnah Daf Beis Amud Aleph, and we talk about Mitzias HaKatan, right? So we're talking about a case of Mitzias Beno Ubito HaKtanim, and the question is, does the father have a yad to be kone through his son or his daughter when they make a kinyan? And also we have Mitzias Avdo v'shifchas haknanim, we have Mitzias Ishto. In all these cases, harei elu shelo. So it means that the father's yad extends through his children, husband through his wife, and the adon, the master, through his eved or shifcha. And we're talking about an eved knani, because an eved ibri has his own yad. He can be kona for himself. And now we have all these cases of Metzias Isha.
Okay.
So we're about to start the shiur, and Sammy is here, so we can get started. Now let me give a little bit of introduction here. We have the case of a katan. Now, Shmuel in the Gemara is going to introduce a special takana of Mitzias Katan. Mm-hmm. And Mitzias Katan is Li'aviv. Which means that Shmuel is holding that the Mitzias Katan is not Doraisa, but it's only Drabbanon. And if we're talking about a Katan, and the Rabbanon made this takana, so Tosus Diva Maskil Omar Shmuel, which we haven't gotten up to yet, he's going to have a whole discussion about the age of the Katan, and the relationship between the Katan and his father, which is called Samuch al Shulchan Aviv.
Yeah.
And the assumption is that if it's a case of Samuch al Shulchan Aviv, then it could be that we don't need this special Takon. The significance of this Katan, this Mishnah of Katan, is that even though he's not Samach al Shulchan Aviv, nevertheless Mitziaso live Aviv. And that's going to be the subject of this Tosus Dibra Masel V'Yomar Shmuel. So I'm just mentioning it before we even start the sugya, that we have to determine what is the nature or the scope of this takana that the Chachamim established, that a Mitzias Katan accrues to the father. Is it only in a case of Samach al Shulchan Aviv, or perhaps the way Shmuel is going to have it, it's a chiddush that even if he's Eino Samach al Shulchan Aviv, and therefore to some extent he's an independent financial entity, but nevertheless the Chacham made a takana that his mitzia, if he finds an aveda, accrues to the father.
Can you just, for background, refresh my mind, Katan has a yard?
Katan, we're assuming now, has no yad. The Gemara is going to clarify back and forth.
Has no yad.
Because again, we're going quite to Shmuel. The Gemara is going to vacillate back and forth about whether a Katan does have a yad. But right now, we're assuming that Shmuel is right, and the entire enterprise of a Katan being Zoch and a Mitzia is a Takonis Chacham, because the Katan himself has no yad. Again, exactly in what case, in what circumstances we need this Takana, and when exactly it operates, would it apply even to a katan she'eino samach al shulchan aviv? That I'm just giving you a heads up. That's going to be the major battle here in Tosfos.
I think the takana applies that the katan has a yad, but the takana is such that it goes to the other, even though he has.
Right, it's a double takana here. If we hold these eino samach al shulchan aviv, there was one takana that a katan could be zochin a mitzia. Notice Chacham gave him a kinyan yad. And there's another takana that when he's zochin a mitzia, the mitzia accrues to his father. And with regard to that second takana, we're going to have an issue in the Rishonim. Does that apply to any case of a katan, or only to a katan who's somach al shulchan aviv? As if to say there's like a barter exchange deal here. You know, we're going to say that, you know, since the father is supporting him, so therefore, Chacham established that the mitzia of the katan who's being supported by his father should now accrue to the father. Now, what about the case of Metzias Ishto? So we're going to soon see that Rashi identifies Metzias Ishto as part of the framework of Ksuba. And within the framework of Ksuba, Chazal established that there should be a harmonious relationship between him and her, the marriage relationship, and that even enters into the financial realm. So for example, Chazal were misakin that he has to support his wife. And as a quid pro quo, she has to bring her earnings, her wages into the marriage and give it to him. So he supports her, she brings in her wages, and a similar takana was established as far as Metzias Ishto, that in order that they should work in a certain harmonious way, and he's willing to do whatever he has to do for her, and there's a whole list of obligations within the framework of Ksuba that fall on his shoulders, so Chazal gave him a zchus in her yad, in her mitzia. Okay, then we get up to the case of Avdo Vishivchaso, and here we have a principle called Mashakana Eved Kana Rabo. And the yad of the Eved is an extension of the yad of the Adon, of the master.
Wait, so to Ephraim?
And that, no, only in Eved Kanan. And that could be a Doraisa Haloka, as opposed to the cases of Beno Bito Akhtanim and Metzias Ishto, where it was the Takonis Chachomin. Again, in Beno Ishto Akhtanim, it's a double Takona, either number one, first and foremost, that they have a yad. But as far as who should get the Metziah, who owns the Metziah, that's a separate takana that applies both in the case of Bino Bito Akhtanim and the case of Ishto, the Rabbanu Misakin, that he, the father or the husband, collect the and possess the Metziah. In the case of Avdo V'Shivchos HaKnanim, that very well might be a Doraisa Halacha, that Yad HaEved Ki Yad Rabba. Then the Mishnah continues. And the Mishnah says, Metzias Ishto Shigirsha Afal Pisho Nosan Ksubosa Hare Elu Shelahen. In other words, if the entire right of the father, the husband in Metzias Ishto is only Mishum Eva, so there shouldn't be any friction or tension in the marriage, that only applies up to the Gerishin. Mm-hmm. Now, even though she hasn't collected her Ksuba yet, and you might think that since this Takana was established within the framework of the Ksuba, as long as she hasn't collected the Ksuba, he should still have rights to the Ksuba, and within the rights to the Ksuba, he has rights to her Metziah. So again, this could be a nafkamina of a very expensive object. You know, after the get, but before he pays up the Ksuba, she finds a diamond ring. Who owns that diamond ring? And the Mishnah is establishing that she owns the diamond ring. Even though, again, he still has the Ksuba, he hasn't yet paid the Ksuba, and in that sense, you might think that the diamond ring is his, and the Mishnah wants to mechadish that no, that's not so. Now we get to the Iker Sugya. Omar Shmuel, Mipnei Ma Omru Metzias Katon Li Aviv. Why is it that the yad of the Katon is on behalf of the Aviv? Now the Loshen of Mipnei Ma Omru is indicative of a takanas chachamim. So that means the chachamim mesakim that a katan, although he doesn't have a yad, in the case of Metziah at least, the chachamim gave him a yad. And number two, they established that the kinyan that the katan makes is now, it now accrues back to the farm. Shevisha Shemotza Meritza Eitzel Aviv V'eino Ma'acher Biyada. Now this could be understood in one of two ways. Either it means that it's natural for the katan to bring a metziah back to his father, you know, that's sort of like kibrav, you know, that's what he does. Or what Shmuel is saying is that the katan is obligated to do so. He's not allowed to keep the object for himself, and immediately after he lifts up the object, he has to do so on behalf of his father. And therefore the Rabbanan, based on this chiyuv that the katan has, that he has to run back to his father with this mitziah after he lifts it up, they were mesakin that the father should be konan the mitziah. Now here I want to read to you two very important notes. One is the Mari Abua, who's quoted here in the Shita Mekubetzes. Now, in order to appreciate his kasha,
who is he?
I think, if I'm not mistaken, he was in the city of Tzfat. Am I right? You could still see, you could still visit, I think, his synagogue. So keep in mind that Rabbi Tzal Ashkenazi, the author of the Shita Mekubetzes, he lived 5 centuries ago, and he was mostly located in Cairo, but he was connected to all the Chachamim of Tzfat at that time. You know, the main center of Torah Judaism in Israel was in Tzfat at that time. So I think that's where the Mari Abuav was. But again, we're going to try to present his question and his answer. And in order to do so, and this touches on the issue of whether a katan has a Yad D'Oraisa or not, we're going to read Rashi, Dibra Maschil Meritza. Rashi says the following. Meritza Eitzel Aviv, it's about 15 lines up from the bottom of the Amud. Hilkach, Rashi says, Kshemagbia Litzorech Aviv Higbio. Which sounds like Rashi is saying that a katan does not have his own yad, and therefore we're going to assume that whatever he's doing is an extension of his father's yad. Now, why is that important to us? Let's read the next line in the Gemara. The Gemara says, "Lemeimra de Savar Shmuel katan lesle zechia lenafshe midoraisa." And the way that Rashi is learning this is that the takana of Amru Chacham of Shmuel is a twofold takana. First of all, to give him the ability to make this kinyan, which on a deraisa level he cannot do, and secondly, to facilitate the father's kinyan in this object. Now, if you read Rashi, Dibra Maschil Meritza Eitzel Aviv, which again is explaining Shmuel, Rashi says that Kishmagbil Itzorech Aviv Higbio. It sounds like Rashi is assuming that the fact that the Katan could make a Hagbah that would be a meaningful Kinyan, that's a given. That's not part of Shmuel. Shmuel's Chiddush is that what Amru Chachamim, that his Hagbah, the Katan's Hagbah, is as an extension of the father. So therefore, the Mari Abuav asks the following question. The Gemara says, "Lebeimer disavar Shmuel katan lesle schil inafshe midaraisa." Well, wait a second. What do you mean lesle schil midaraisa? Who says? Maybe Shmuel would hold that the katan really, as far as the Torah law is concerned, could be zocha for himself. But when he's magbia, it's halach and agbah that agbah relates to aviv. Who says that he can't be zocha himself? Meaning, there's a Doraisa and there's a Drabon. Rashi says that the Drabon here of Shmuel is to establish that the Agbah of the Katan relates to the and accrues to the father. Mm-hmm. But Rashi's not telling us that the very Yad that he has to be Zoch in the Mitzvah is a Drabon. The assumption is that he has a Yad. The question is he operating on behalf of himself or on behalf of his father? Rashi puts all the emphasis on, is he operating on behalf of his father? Says Mari Abuav, how then does the Gemara assume in Shmuel that a katan has no yad on a deraisa level? Maybe a katan does have a yad. Then he adds a little fuel to the flame here. He says, V'od demidivrei Shmuel lo nisparesh ma din kishein a katan meritz mitziaso li'aviv. What would happen if the katan would decide that he's not interested? There's a chair over there if you want to use it. You can bring it up front. So what would happen if Lu Yitzur, the katan, makes a statement?
Just aside from yourself that way.
Oh, okay.
That's what you need.
Oh, okay. Thank you so much. If the katan will make a kiddush after we finish the learning, question is, I didn't bring any hamantash. Okay. So he says the five, just joking. Don't go out and buy a hamantash. Okay. So he asks the father, well, Lu Yitzu, the Kata makes a protest, you know, he makes a statement. I don't want to be Zoch on behalf of my father, I want to be Zoch on my own behalf. Well, according to Rashi, the very premise here of Shmuel, the way Rashi seems to formulate Shmuel, this is all in the kasha of the Maria Bua, if he'll change his mind in his teretz, is Rashi's assuming A, the Kotan has a yad to be Zocha to himself. Again, that's against the Gemara, but that's Rashi seems to be operating with that premise. And the Rabbana made a takana that his Hagbah should be on behalf of the father. Let's say because the father's a nice guy, he's supporting him according to those we showed him that we're talking about Somach al Shulchan Aviv. And quid pro quo, he now has to give the Metziah to his father. So he's might be the Metziah on behalf of his father. So he has a yad, but his Hagbah, the Metziah, was on behalf of his father. But what happens if he would make a statement in front of two witnesses that I'm going to be picking up this Metziah for myself? It would come out, according to Rashi, he should be Zocha for himself. V'tochen, it makes sense, he says, Shemagbil li'atzmo, gam Shmuel yode, sheyesh lo z'chiyah v'doraisa, v'zoch li'atzmo. So the Rabbanan are saying that we assume, under normal conditions, until we know to the contrary, that when he's Magbil l'tzorech aviv, but if Lu Yitzur, we have the opposite assumption, because he made a declaration that he wants to be Zocha for himself, and in fact, according to Rashi, he has a yad to be Zocha for himself, then there should be no din of being Zocha on behalf of his father in such a case. And yet the Mishnah makes an absolute statement, unqualified, that Metzias Pino Bitok Tanim is Li'aviv, Harein Shalom. Well, why is it Harein Shalom? Why? Rashi has an Umdana. Rashi assumes that he picks it up on behalf of his father. So, but you have to know that the Umdana is there. If there's no Umdana, on the contrary, the Kata makes a declaration that he doesn't want the father to be Zocha, then let him be Zocha Li'atzmo because he has a Yah.
The Pashtus in Shmuel is to say, that Machir is it, that somebody else grabs him, so there was no Kenyan, it belongs to whoever. Pashtus seems to, they couldn't ask him that at all.
Correct, and the question of Ari Abuav is how do you fit in that into Rashi? Because the way he's reading Rashi is not the way the Gemara says it. The Gemara is saying that since you know his father's doing whatever his father's doing for him, so therefore he's Maritza Eitzel Aviv. You know, he runs back, and therefore from the moment he made the Kenyan, his intention was Laritza Eitzel Aviv, and therefore the Hagbah is Litzarech Aviv. That's an assumption which makes sense. If A, the Katan has his own yad, then B, he's Magbia on behalf of his father. But A is a difficult premise because the Gemara is going to assume that according to Shmuel, the Katan has no yad. And B, the second assumption is also difficult to assume that only if the case of an Umdano where he's Maritza Tzalavim, therefore we assume, you know, Iglai Milsa Mafrey, that we picked it up, he picked it up on behalf of his father. That would mean that he has the right to say, I don't want to pick up on behalf of his father. Now the Maria Buov offers his own pshat, and it doesn't sound like he's willing to push this into Rashi. I'm going to read to you his language. He says the following: Yesh lomar deminat Torah ein lekatan zchia. As far as the Torah law is concerned, he doesn't have the ability to make a kinyan. He doesn't have a yad lekinyan. Elabol chachomim v'tiknu mitzias katan li'aviv. And now that Chachamim made a double takana, as we said, number one, they gave him a yad for Kinyan, and number two, they established that the Metziah now accrues to whom? To Aviv. Is Yesh Ladu? Haim, how does it work? Is it a direct or an indirect? Let me just say a few words before we read this Maria Buav about what's called Mishmash Nachla. Are we familiar with that? Or maybe a better example would be Shibud de Rab Nosson. Which is better? Shibud de Rab Nosson is a little easier. So Shibud de Rab Nosson, Reuven owes money to Shimon. Shimon owes money to Levi, and Levi can collect directly from Reuven. Again, Reuven owes money to Shimon. Shimon owes money to Levi. Levi can come collect from Reuven, even though Levi and Reuven don't know each other.
Mamet Tlushton.
Maybe Maimon Shloshtan, maybe Shibud the Rav Nosson doesn't even require Maimon Shloshtan. So now we have a tremendous machlokas rishonim. What happens in a case where Shimon is mochel the chov that Reuven owes him? So does that mechila work? And it all depends upon how shibud the Rav Nosson works. If shibud the Rav Nosson means that now Levi has a direct relationship to Reuven, because the shibud of Reuven to Shimon now is acquired by Levi, so then the mechila of Shimon in the middle is not meaningful. Those Rishonim who say it is meaningful means that the way shibud the Rav Nosson works is that Levi picks up the shibud of Shimon to Reuven, and now he collects like as a replacement for Shimon, but really the shibud still remains between Reuven and Shimon. Just on the side, the same question applies to Mishmash Nachla. Again, if you're not into Nachla, you don't have to listen to what I'm saying, but for myself. And Mishmash Nachla means that, let's say, again, this is difficult to express, but let's say the son dies, but he leaves a son. So now the grandson inherits his grandfather. And again, the question is, how does he inherit his grandfather? Is that first the money accrues to the son, and then when the son dies, then the grandson will inherit his father. But he never has a direct inheritance to his grandfather. Or no, Mishmash Nachla is just a Gili Milsa. It tells me that the grandson, if there's no son, now becomes the heir of his grandfather. The Gemara is Kama Vakama Nafkiminus. And when you're talking about grandparents and grandchildren, then you have to introduce the whole issue of Kibud Av. You know, whether the Kibud Av of a grandson is directly to his grandfather, it's only through... So if his father's not around, he doesn't have any Chiyuv Kibud to his grandfather. So here also, Maria Buav wants to understand, how does the father Zoche in this Mitzir? And he says, Yesh Lachar, he says there are two ways of understanding. Bo Chachamim, because again, according to Maria Buav, as we saw in the Gemara, the Katan doesn't have a Yad, Midoraisa. So the Rabbanu are establishing a Yad. And now they're establishing a second Takana that the Mitzia goes to the father. Yesh Lodu. Haim HaKotan Zochel Yatzmo. First the object, this Mitzia, enters into the possession and is acquired by the son, by the Katan. The Acherkach, and then there's a second stage, Li'aviv, then it accrues back to his father. Or the other possibility is Shemiyad Zocha Li'aviv. Immediately, he Zocha on behalf of his father. So he suggests to Mari Abuav that that's what Shmuel wants to derive from our Mishnah. We're going to read Shmuel again now in a different light. Shmuel was Medayik from our Mishnah that in the case of Metzias Katan, like in the other cases of an Eved and an Isha, it's not that the Katan first is Zocha for himself and then it accrues as a second stage back to his father, but that the father is Zocha immediately, directly through the Kinyan, through the Agbah of the son. And he says the following. How do we see that in the words of Shmuel? How do we see that Shmuel is learning that there's a direct relationship between the Metzia now and the father, meaning that the Katan is only the intermediary, but really the father is directly being Zoch in the Metzia? That's what Shmuel means when he says, Vishah Shemotza Meritza Eitzel Aviv. A whole new pshat in Meritza Eitzel Aviv. He says the following, that what he means by Meritza Eitzel Aviv is that when the Chachamim established a Kinyan Yad, because again the Maria Buav insists that Doraisi doesn't have a Kinyan, then Tiknu Shelo, just 1 second, I'll read it again, Shebeglal Shemarisa Yitzalav, Lo Tiknu Klal Shakotan Zoche, they never added stage number one, that the Kotan first is Zoche, and then in stage two the father is Zoche. Ulefize, this is how he wants to answer Akash. He says the following. If you recall back on Daf Ches, we said that there was a principle called Chav L'Acherim. Correct? Let's say I want to be Zoche de Metzia for you, not for myself. Can my Hagbah be operative on your behalf? So the Gemara says that we have a principle called Migu de Zoche L'Nafshe, Zoche Nami L'Chavre. That since he can be Zoche for himself, then he can be Zocha for someone else. Now that's a little bit complicated if we could apply that to Katan, because we're assuming now that a Katan cannot be Zocha for himself. So if that be the case, when you can't be Zocha for yourself, you can't be Zocha for someone else. Your whole right to be Zocha for someone else is based on the fact that you could be zocher for yourself. Well, I have a kasha. Because in the case of a katan, if he can't be zocher for himself, how can he be zocher on behalf of his father? Elo lefi dvareinu, he says, now we can understand the mitzias katan, yesh takana miyuchedes. In other words, if not for a special takana, that what the son finds and makes agbon, it goes automatically to the father, ki'ilu aviv higbia bi'atzmo, so now the yad of the katan becomes an extension of the father. If you didn't say so, if you would say that the katan first is zocher because chachamim gave him a yad li'atzmo, and then afterwards he's zocher on behalf of his father, well, he's got a problem, because there's no migud zocher l'nafshe in such a case. Why? Because we're saying that he doesn't have the ability to be zocher for himself, at least on a deraisa level, and therefore he can't be zocher for someone else. But the answer is that's not the nature of the takana. What Shmuel wants to establish here is that when the Chachamim created this din, this enactment that the Metzias Katan is li'aviv, it means merisa. Merisa means that the hadbar was done directly on behalf of the father and by the father. In other words, the halacha, the legal status of this hagbah, is that of the father being zocher li'atzmo. So therefore we don't say chav l'acherim, we don't say that, well, only if he can be zocher to himself could he be zocher on behalf of someone else. So just to summarize, what we have here from Ari Abuav is a diuk in Rashi, and he assumes that according to Rashi A, there is a yad for the katan to be zochet to himself. B, according to Rashi, the katan has decided that in the framework of his respect for his father, he will be zochet on behalf of his father. And we had a number of kashas on Rashi. Then we get to the Ari Abuav's own pshat, and he says that the katan has no yad to be zochet himself. He's only able to be zochet on behalf of his father, but the question is, how is he zochet on behalf of the father? Does it go first into the reshus of the katan himself, and after his zechia, then as a separate stage two, it goes from the yad, from the bialus of the son to the bialus of the father? And then he says, well, that's a problem because since we say that migu du zoch linafshi zoch linam l'chavri allows you to be zoch in a metzia for someone else, here what we're saying is that we never gave him a yad to be zocher for himself. We only gave him a yad, according to Shmuel, to be zocher directly on behalf of his father. But the answer is, Shmuel is establishing that the yad of the katan, when he makes the agbah, is an extension of the yad of his father. Now I want to introduce another chiddush here of the Ritva. And the Ritva wants to analyze this Gemara. The Gemara says, L'meimer d'savar Shmuel, Katon lesleis chiel enafshei midoraisa. That Shmuel implies that the entire yad, the ability for a katon to be zoche, it's all part of the takana of the chachamim that the zchia should be on behalf of the father. Says the Ritva, sheim nomar shekatan zoche min haTorah. If a katon has the zchus min haTorah to be zoche, lo maspik. Time of Shal Shmuel Kedei Levatil Es Zechias HaKotim L'chaivu L'tein Es HaMetzil Li'oviv. In other words, there's a battle here, because the Torah recognizes the Yad of the Katan. On the other hand, the Rabbanan want to establish that Metziah should go to the father, that they're trying to create a certain quid pro quo, happy family relationship, which I understand very well. But if the Torah itself recognizes that this Metziah goes to the Katan because he has a Yad, then the Rabbanu would not be empowered to remove that Yad. Now again, you might apply the principle of Hefker Bezen Hefker, but if we don't assume Hefker Bezen Hefker, then Shmuel makes no sense, because if the Katan could be Zochet to for himself Midoraisa, then what are you going to tell me? Well, yeah, he's interested in giving it to the father and so forth and so on. And now the father's going to be zocher. But wait a second, the katan has rights. He owns the object because the Torah recognizes his yad. How could the Rabbanu now establish that for whatever reason of Shmuel, Meratzei Tzolovin, that therefore he's zocher on behalf of his father? He has a right to be zocher on behalf of himself. Now, in the back of the Gemara, you have someone called the Maram Shif. I never heard of him in the shiur that I attended, but when you learn the Masifta, you get a lot of Maram Shif. And he says, based on this Ritva, he says, "Bevadai eina katan zochel yatsu min haTorah." In other words, he's saying that there was never an issue, there was never a question that a katan for sure doesn't have a yad to be zochel on his own behalf. What leads the Maram Shif to draw that conclusion? I mean, the Gemara seems to be vacillating back and forth about whether a katan has a yad or doesn't have a yad. In fact, the Gemara is going to try to prove from Halach of Socher Sapor that a katan actually does have a yad min haTorah. So what does he mean when he says, "Bevadai ein haKatan zochel liatzmo min haTorah"? And he says the following, "She'im nomar," if we were to say that a katan zochel liatzmo min haTorah, so let's read that Mishnah. The Mishnah says, "Mitzias b'no ubito haKtanim, hare elu shalom," which means that the language of the Mishnah clearly indicates, in the case of Mitzia li'aviv, that it's always li'aviv. Why? So the Gemara says in the name of Shmuel, "Katan meritz mitziaso li'aviv." Now here the Maram Shif actually employs the same argument, the same logic as the Mari Abua, again in a different context, but he uses the same logic. And he says, "If eino meritz li'aviv, then the assumption should be that he's zocha liatzma." That doesn't make any sense, because Shmuel is interpreting our Mishnah, and the Mishnah says in an unqualified way that mitzias b'no bito ketanim is harei l'shalom. But now you're telling me that if he's not meritz li'aviv, then it's liatzma. Elavadai, it must be that in the language of the Mishnah, and Shmuel's going to have to, so to speak, confer or certify this principle. The language of the Mishnah indicates that Eina Katan Yochol Lizkos Liatzmo Min haTorah. Because again, as we said before, if he was able to be Zocha Liatzmo Min haTorah, then how could we establish that, you know, automatically we assume that if we take it away from the Katan and we give it to the father? Ela vadai, says Amram Shif, eina katan yochol lizkos liatzmo min haTorah. V'kevet shechachonim tiknu shekatan zocher, they gave a koach to the son that he, even though he's a katan, he can be zocher. Is v'kochem lahosif, now they can go one step further and they can make a takana shamitziya tiliyaviv. And that means that the mitziya is always, as an unqualified statement, belongs to the father. So therefore, the Gemara asks the following question: "L'meimer d'savr Shmuel katan lesle zechil inafshi minat midoraisa." So says Amram Shif, what the Gemara is pointing out is that Shmuel is establishing, based on the language of the Mishnah, an absolute halacha that the mitzia, the katan, always goes to the father. And why should that be so? After all, the katan has yad to be zocha on behalf of himself. And the only way that Shmuel could make any sense out of our Mishnah, says Amram Shif, is he assumes that it was the Chachamim that gave the Katan the Yad, and Heimamr veHeimamr, the same Chachamim who established that the Katan could be Zocha in this Mitzvah, established that he could be Zocha on behalf of Aviv. Which means that the predicate that underlies our Mishnah, the way Shmuel interprets it, is that a Katan does not have a Yad to be Zocha himself. And the Gemara is going to ask, so what do we do with the Brisa of Asocher Sapoel, which says that Yelakit B'no Achrov, and all this is dealing with the Doraisa Aloch, as we'll see, and this contradicts our Mishnah. And finally, he quotes the Tosus HaRosh. The Tosus HaRosh says, "L'meimer d'savra Shmuel katan lesle zechiyah midoraisa," and the intention of this Gemara is to say that Gam midrabbanan elo zechiyah, kevan she'ena matbias ametzia liatzmo liaviv, is nimtza she'en kavanoso lizkos liatzmo v'eich yizke b'metzia. In other words, he's assuming, like the other tzad in the Mari Abuah, the Tosa Rosh is assuming that first and foremost the katan has to be zocher for himself, and only then could he be zocha for his father, because otherwise it's not a bigud to zocha l'nafshi zochinam l'chaver. He must have a yad for himself, otherwise he can't have a yad for his father. So the Tulsa Rush is rejecting the idea of what we call yad arichta, that the yad of the son of the katan is now the yad of his father. No, it only works because bigud to zocha l'nafshi zochinam l'chaver. So you must assume that when the Rabbanan established this takana, what they did was they gave him a yadli atzmo. Now, that's only on a Rabbanan level, correct? So what the Gemara is asking now is lemeimer de sover shmul katan lesle zechia midoraisa, meaning he has a zechia midrabbanan, and he must have a zechia midrabbanan, because if he doesn't have a zechia midrabbanan, it would be impossible for him to be zocha on behalf of his father, because again, the Tosa Rosh is operating with the migu. Now what we're going to say is the following, that when he makes the Akbar, he's going to make the Akbar on behalf of his father. Now we have a question. Well, now we really have a problem, because according to our premise, the only way he could be zocha on behalf of his father is if he's zocha on his own behalf. Because only when he could be zocha on his own behalf, then he could be zocha on behalf of his father. But now what we're saying is that Magbia Samatzia, he's not picking it up on behalf of himself, right? He's Maritza Salavit, which means that his kavan is not to be zocha himself, but be zocha too on behalf of his father. How could that work? It's impossible. Unless he has a yad to be zocha li atzmo, that would effectuate the migu de zocha l'nafshi zocha l'nam l'chaver. But if you don't assume that he has a yad to be zocha with a raisa, then we really have a problem over here, because how do you understand the mechanics of being zocha on behalf of his father? You're saying that he picks it up on behalf of his father because he's maritza tzolaviv. That would make no sense, because then he has no kavanah to be zocha liatzma. So the only way you can get out of this problem, says the Gemara, is if you assume that somehow the Rabbanan made a double takana here, and again, the Tosa Rosh doesn't flesh this out, but again, he's somehow assuming that what the Rabbanan did was, I don't know, the only way I could go is with the Maria Buav. I don't know of another approach. Okay, let's just spend a few more minutes on this braisa. The Gemara says, is it true that according to Shmuel, the Meimer is of Shmuel cut on Leslie Skil and Afshim in the raisa? So the Gemara now is going to bring a proof from a different statement of Shmuel, that Schias Katan is do raisa. Now the Gemara now is going to postulate a stira between two statements of Shmuel. For Sanya, we have a braisa, and the main thing is to see Shmuel's comment on this braisa, but we have to first go through this braisa. And the braisa is talking about what's called an oris. And the braisa says the following. The owner of the field, Socheres Hapoalim, so he hires workers for the harvest. They should do the ktsira. And he pays them what's called lefi yomim or lefi shos, which means that he pays them per hour or per day. Now the question is the poel, this worker, is he allowed to invite his children, let's say b'no hakotan, achrov, after him? And this is going to be an issue in terms of Mashen Nosher Li'ovim B'Eis HaKtzira. So let me just read the Mishnah. Well, before I get to the Brisa, just to give you a little background. Shibolim HaNoshrim B'Eis HaKtzira Harehem Leket. So until now we were dealing with Shichacha, now we're dealing with Leket. So leket really applies when they're gathering together the omrim, and he left one behind. That's called shichacha. I meant to say shichacha. Yeah. What's leket? Leket means that if he cuts with a sickle, and some of the some of the wheat or whatever the grain is falls outside of the kli, the receptacle, that belongs automatically to the aniv, that's called leket. And now the question is, how do we define the relationship between the poel and his son? Mm-hmm. His son is standing behind him, and he's now collecting that which fell from his father, didn't go directly into the kli. And then he brings that leket to his father. So the halacha is as follows. If the poel was hired on a basis of what's called kablanut, which means lemechza l'shlish or l'revia. Lemechza means that the poel receives half, 50% of what he collects. The balance goes to the Baal Bais, or l'shlish or l'revia, a third or a quarter. Then it says lo yalakit b'no achrav. So in other words, this is called kablanut. Kablanut means that we consider the poel to be like an owner of the field. And if he's owner of the field, he doesn't have any rights to collect leket, because leket has to go to someone other than the owner of the field. So anyone who's considered the owner of the field, like in the case of kablanut, where he gets a certain percentage of the produce, then he's like an osher. An osher means that he cannot be zocha in peah. Now what happens is his son is collecting afterwards. Well, an usher is not allowed to collect leket shekopeya because it all belongs to the aniyim. So we're going to treat him as a balabas, just like the balabas cannot appoint his son to collect leket because the moment it's leket, it belongs to the aniyim. So too, in this case of a poel, if the poel is called a kablan, which means he gets a certain percentage, he's not paid by the hour, but he gets paid by the percentage of his produce, he becomes like a shutav, like a partner in the field. He has the same identical din in matnas aniyim as the owner of the field. And Rabbi Yossi disagrees. Bein kach hu bein kach. It doesn't matter whether he's being hired per day and he's being paid per hour or per day, or if he's a kablan and he's getting a certain percentage of the produce. In both cases, he's not considered the owner of the field, and he's not considered an usher, and therefore yalakid b'no v'ishto acharav. In other words, the members of his family allowed to pick up the leftover leket. Again, does that mean that he has a din of an ani? That's what Rav Yossi says. He has a din of an ani. Again, a lot of this has to do with what his income is, but let's assume he doesn't have too much income. And the chiddush here is that Rabbi Yossi holds that even in the case of kablan, who collects a certain percentage of the produce of the harvest, he's not considered a partner in the field. And if he's physically, you know, in terms of his financial state, he's an ani, then he's considered like an ani, and he can invite his children to pick up the leket. V'yomar Shmuel halacha k'Rabbi Yossi, and Shmuel accepts Rabbi Yossi. Now the Gemara thinks that Rabbi Yossi understands that the child who's behind his father and he picks up the leket, he is zoche in matnas aniyim, right? We've discussed this already in the past that in matnas aniyim the ani has to make a zechiah. Until the ani makes a zechiah, the leket shichapeh belongs to all the aniyim, not to one specific ani. So the Gemara says the following: if you understand that a katan has a yad to be zoche in a mitziah, and that's a doraisa halacha, and in the case of matnas aniyim, like a mitziah, he can be zoche, he has a yad, then we can understand this halacha of yalakeh b'no achra. Why? Because ki kamalakeh l'nafshei kamalakeh. He has the right and the ability to implement a kinyan and make agbah in this leket, if he's an ani again, on behalf of himself. V'avua, and then we're going to apply the principle of Shmuel, that mineka zochi, you know, is the father who's also a poel can be zocha through his ben. Ela I amrit katan lesle zchil enafshe. If the way we saw it in Shmuel is that the Rabbanim were the ones who instituted a yad for the katan, meaning on a deraisa level he has no yad, is ki kamalakit li aviv kamalakit avua ashir. In other words, since Rabbi Yossi extended this principle of allowing the son to pick up the leket, even to a case where the father's a kablan, which means that he gets a percentage of the produce of the field, then in that case he's an ashir, he's an owner of the field. Is amai ishto ubanov malakit achrov. That's more now understood that ishto ubanov malaktim achrov means that they can be malakit on behalf of their father. And that would only make sense if you assume that first and foremost they have a yad to be zocher on their own behalf. And then you could say that since with the raisa they have a yad and they're aniyim, they could be zocher. And then we can apply the second stage and we can say that this leket, which is now picked up and it was zocher by the katan, now accrues to the father. But if you're going to tell me that the katan himself doesn't have a yad, which means he's just an extension of the yad of his father, as we saw in the Maria Abuah, then how could they pick up the pair? The father's status in the case of a kablan is that of an owner. He's a partner in the field. And therefore he has a din of what? Of an usher, no matter how much money he has in his bank account. So I'll just read to you the footnote here. He says, Me'ata, since Kema the Shmuel Pasach Kirab Yossi, Al Karchach, we must conclude that Shmuel Sover Shekotin Zochim and Atorah B'mitzia Li'atzmo. And therefore he has an independent status as an Ani. Well, that's against Shmuel, who said in our Mishnah that a katan has no schiyo min haTorah, but Omru Chachamim, the Chachamim said that we are going to establish a yad of the katan, that he could be zokra, and we're going to add another element, another stage to this establish, to this enactment, that the katan is zokra not only on, not on his own behalf, but on behalf of his father. But that all makes sense if you assume that the katan has no yad midoraisa. But in this braisa, in Shmuel's accepting the shita Rav Yossi, and Rav Yossi's shita can only make sense if we assume that a katan has a yad midoraisa to be zocha, because otherwise the katan would have the status of his father as an extension of his father's zechiyah, which means the father's an usher in the case of a kablan, and there's no way, no how that he can pick up leket. But if we assume the katan has a skus midoraisa, migu de zochi lenafshe, he can be zocha for himself, then we can assume that he is an ani, he's independent of his father. What he does with the leket afterwards, that's his own decision. And if we want to say that once the katan was zocher in the leket, he can give it to his father, that's not a problem. So tomorrow, Mitzvah Hashem, I want to study with you Rabbeinu Chananel. I want to study with you the Tosfos in Masechta Gittin and the Rashba. I don't know if you feel you have a possibility by any chance of sending this to the printer so that everybody could have a copy. That would save me a tremendous hassle. And I wish everyone a great day.
Yeah.
If you don't mind, maybe give us possibly two pages, because I know that the symbols are very important. You know, the footnotes that I need now are Yudalid. And you test, and you test, and then on the next page I need number A. That's very critical. Now, last time we did this, I don't know, it came out very light, but I'm not sure if that was because of the printer or if that was because of the masif itself.
I don't remember.
Do you remember that about a year ago? It came out very light. It was like very hard to read.
Hopefully, they replaced the
chairs. Rabbi, in there you have also the little metal mesh thing. You have the tea. Yeah, I bought you also the tea.
Oh,
the tea is there. There are two bags of tea. So have a tea now. You'll see.
It's an anise.
I have the anise tea, the licorice tea, and you have the arak you'll have tonight. And you can have.
Oh, so now I get hot water.
Just put in.
So I leave the arak for tonight.
You'll have the arak, but the
I don't know what date it is on the Lubavitch calendar, but we have to have the fabrik.
But the licorice.
That's good enough.
Put it in that little round thing, and the mesh thing about, and just put the equivalent of a teaspoon into one of these paper things here. You have paper cups. That would begin the process. But I would have that 2-3 times a day.
Oh, so once I squeeze out the others, then I put it into the
Look at that.
We're not talking about on this. We're talking about.